It's Tuesday, the day we read from your emails and blog comments. Many parts of the southeast United States haven't seen any significant rainfall in months. During our show last week on the drought, many of you sent us suggestions on how to cut down on water use. Don Venardos of Thousand Oaks, California, argued that fines and jail sentences are not the answer. You can achieve the same or better conservation, he wrote, by increasing the marginal cost of water. Set a baseline rate and then hike it very fast and very high for going over. If somebody wants to pay $10,000 to water their lawn or wash their pet, fine. Nobody goes to jail, water consumption goes down, and the consumer gets to choose the most effective way to conserve. Another listener, EMM, emailed to tell us, I'm from North Carolina, where we have an outdoor watering ban, but I know several of my neighbors are secretly watering at night or in their backyards. I think residential water usage should be a public record, like tax values. If my neighbors could look online and see how much I'm using compared to them, I'd be more likely to conserve. I wouldn't want my neighbors to come blaming me when we run out and have to go on rationing. We also talked last week about the long-running controversy over race and the criminal justice system. Most studies show the percentage of African Americans in prison is much larger than their numbers in the population overall. Tom Mazurek emailed us his thoughts. The fact is that blacks commit a disproportionate amount of crimes that require a prison sentence. The goal of criminal law is not to imprison a proportionate amount of each of the population's components. They're not in prison because they're black, but because they've committed the felony requiring imprisonment. Another listener saw it much differently. The main point is that black people are sentenced more harshly for the same crimes as whites. This cannot be explained away by anything other than an ingrained prejudice in society. It's a prejudice that's been shown to be present in all races as minorities tend to absorb the stereotypes of the majority. That comment sent by John on our blog. The day before Halloween, we talked about the hows and whys of nightmares and asked you to send us your scariest dream. Larry Pryluck sent us this email. When I was about 9 in 1961, I dreamt that a man who spoke only in snores was chasing me. I tried controlling this by picturing Roger Maris hitting a home run. He did! And when the ball landed in the lower right field stands at Yankee Stadium, there was the man again, speaking only in snores. I woke up and realized the snores were from my father, sleeping in the next room. I wonder what Freud would have to say about that. Another listener, Scott Guffey, just wishes he could dream at all. I'd be happy to have nightmares, he wrote. I have no sensation of dreaming at all. I shut my eyes at night and suddenly it's morning. I don't think that's normal. That is common among the population, but that's been my experience for more than 20 years now. If you have comments, questions, or corrections for us, the best way to reach us is by email. The address is talk@npr.org. Please let us know where you're writing from and give us some help on how to pronounce your name. Talk of the Nation is produced by Susan Lund, Susanna George, David Gura, Ashley Grashaw, Dahlia Martinez, and Barry Hardiman. Our editor is Scott Cameron. Beth Novi produces our web content. Our intern is Kate Brandley. Gwen Uten directs the program. Our assistant producer is Sarah Handel. Drew Reynolds is our technical director. He gets engineering help from John Widoff and Jerry Tennant. Talk of the Nation's theme music was composed by Greg Smith. Our senior producer is Carlene Watson. Sue Goodwin is the executive producer of Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan, NPR News in Washington.